Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the ABN AMRO analyst call for the first quarter of 2013. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Friday, the 17th of May, 2013. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, John van Houten. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon or good morning, depending on where you are. Welcome to our investors and analysts call on ABN AMRO's first quarter results. I'm joined here today, as usual, with Wietse Rehorn, our CRO, Dies Donker, Head of Investor Relations, and Eric Bosmans, Head of Treasury. Together, we will discuss our interim results in greater detail with you. I would like to point out that we published a short presentation on our website this morning, and during this call, we will be using this presentation. Our full investors presentation will be published later today. Starting, I'll move immediately to page two of the presentation. Before I go into details of the results, I wanted to draw your attention to some changes in our disclosures aimed to increase transparency to the market and to reflect regulatory changes. Firstly, given that we have finished the integration in 2012, we mentioned that earlier, we'll be no longer reporting underlying results. In order to enable a like-for-like comparison, the historical results as of 2011 are now presented as reported results. The separation and integration costs are now a large item, and a list of these large items is included in the press release, annex three, I think. Furthermore, we are also presenting from now on the more detailed results of the segments every quarter. Historical results are in the fact sheet, which is available on the website. In addition, we have introduced additional quarterly risk disclosures, such as impaired exposures per industry and collateral and net exposures for the main product classes. Lastly, as from the 1st of January this year, we have adopted the amended IAS 19, and as a result, the 2012 figures have been adjusted accordingly for comparison purposes. Turning to the results on slide two. The results for Q1 2013 was 415 million, which is 17% lower compared to the same period in 2012. A material increase compared to the last quarter, and the last quarter 2012 was negatively influenced by integration costs and the full year charge of the 2012 Dutch banking tax. The result in Q1 2013 is influenced by various large items. Positively, by the impact of releases related to the sale of a second tranche of the Greek government-guaranteed corporate bonds. It was an amount of 297 million or 223 million net of tax. Furthermore, negatively impacted by an adjustment of the revenues in securities finance as a result of a reassessment of a part of our securities financing activities. Finally, there was a restructuring provision, I will discuss this later, within commercial and merchant banking for an amount of 37 million. The total impact of these two items was 98 million net of tax. The total impact of large items in Q1 2013, the Greek government-guaranteed bonds, the reassessment of securities financing activities, and the restructuring provision, was 125 million positive. In Q1 2012, the result was influenced by 28 million positive large items. Excluding large items in both years, net profit year-on-year would have been 39% lower to 290 million, due mainly to lower other non-interest income in markets, higher pension costs, and an increase in loan impairments. In Q4 2012, the result was influenced by 43 million of negative large items and by the Dutch bank tax of 112 million. and excluding both, net profit quarter-on-quarter would have increased by 173 million, mainly to lower loan impairments compared to Q4 2012. Now, the results in the first quarter 2013 reflect the continuous challenging economic environment in the Netherlands, with unemployment and bankruptcies rising. Now, moving to slide three, we saw positive developments in net interest income and net fees and commissions. Both increased year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter. Net interest income increased by 5% year-on-year, driven by improved market margins on mortgages and commercial loans, and higher saving volumes and margins. Funding costs, however, increased since maturing funding issued pre-crisis was replaced at higher spreads, and additionally, capital costs increased as new capital instruments, Lower 2 instruments, were issued in 2012. Now, quarter-on-quarter, the 4% increase was mainly driven by higher savings margins and volumes in retail banking as competition for retail deposits has continued to ease. Net fees and commissions increased by 2% year-on-year, driven by private banking and merchant banking, and was partly offset by a loss of insurance fees following the divestments in July 2012 of a part of the corporate insurance activities. Compared to these positive developments, the development of other non-interest income was negative. After adjusting for large items, other non-interest income decreased by 153 million year-on-year, which was driven by lower performance of the markets business, mainly lower securities financing and interest rate derivatives volumes, and a loss of income following the strategic decision to wind down the non-client related activities in the equity derivatives. Furthermore, lower ALM income also negatively impacted other non-interest income. Moving to slide four. We see a rather volatile trend in the operating expenses, and I think this deserves some explanation. Year-on-year, operating expenses increased by 7%, driven by, firstly, higher pension costs. This is a result of strong decrease of the discount rate. Secondly, wage inflation, and thirdly, I mentioned this already, an addition to the restructuring provision as a reorganization has been announced in commercial and merchant banking in order to further improve efficiency. Now, this reorganization is expected to lead to a reduction of approximately 400 positions, this between now and 2015, and a part of this will be realized through natural attrition and internal reallocation. Excluding the integration cost and the Dutch bank tax in Q4 2012, quarter-on-quarter operating expenses also increased. This driven by the three items I just mentioned. Now, a few words more on the higher pension costs. This is driven by IAS 19 revisited. As I mentioned, this was introduced from the beginning of this year. However, we restated the 2012 figures. Now, under IAS 19, the previous principles, pension costs were, amongst others, based on expected rates on the assets. Under IAS 19 revisited, this expected return on assets has been replaced by the discount rates. This discount rate was higher than the expected return on assets, so leading in the restatement 2012 to much lower pension costs. Actually, even to negative cost, or you might say a kind of revenue. Now, the discount rate in 2013 is lower than the one used for 2012, so for 2013, leading to higher pension costs. Now, the amount is 78 million, so this is more or less a technical reason because of new accounting principles and the restatement of 2012, but has quite big an impact on the increase of the personal expenses. The cost-income ratio for the first quarter deteriorated to 68%, driven by large items, but also the higher pension costs and lower market results. Excluding large items, the cost-income ratio would be 4 percentage points lower, so 64%. Now, still on page four, the last graph on slide four shows the development in relation to the impairment charges, corrected for the releases related to the sale of the Greek government-guaranteed bonds. There you see that year-on-year impairment charges increased by 39%, reflecting the weak economic conditions affecting particularly the mortgage book, consumer loans, and SME loan portfolios. Annualized impairment charges over the total mortgage portfolio increased to 21 basis points in Q1 2013 from 10 basis points in Q1 2012. For the full year 2012, the impairment charges were 16 basis points. Quarter-on-quarter, impairment charges decreased considerably, reflecting the seasonality of impairments, with Q4 typically showing high impairment charges, particularly in commercial banking. Now, this is the first view on the results, and I'd like to hand over to Wietse. Oh, no, I will first mention a few words about the balance sheet. Now, sometimes we have a different yes, a vision of task. Okay, a few words on the balance sheet. Moving on to the balance sheet, slide five. I will only focus on the main items compared to year-end 2012. Let me see. Yeah, total assets grew by 20.5 billion, driven by increased client activity in securities financing. Securities financing activities typically decline at the end of the year due to lower client activity. But furthermore, at the end of 2012, there was some uncertainty as to the treatment of securities financing transactions in relation to the liquidity coverage ratio and the Basel III. Now, given more guidance from the Basel Committee in January 2013, client activity picked up again in the first quarter. Total equity, IFRS equity, also increased, driven by a positive effect of the remeasurement of the pension assets and the profit of the period. The increase was, however, partly offset by the full dividend payment, 250 million over 2012, and the call of preference shares for 210 million. Now, apart from the securities financing activities, loans and receivables customers increased marginally in commercial banking and decreased slightly in retail banking, mortgages, and for a small amount in merchant banking, mainly in clearing. Total client deposits grew over the first 3 months to 204 billion, an increase of 3.5 billion compared to year-end 2012. And the increase in Q1 comes largely from retail banking, both in the Netherlands and Germany and Belgium, through our Moneyou subsidiary. Okay, this is about results and a first view on the balance sheet, and now I would like to hand over to Wietse to discuss capital, funding, liquidity, and the asset quality. Okay, Wietse.
Jan, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning, good afternoon. Appreciate, as usual, to have the opportunity to brief you on the results and the position of the bank. Move to slide seven, I would like to suggest, and to give you some explanatory comments on this. Firstly, retained profit has not been included in the Q1 capital position, given that results were not reviewed by an auditor. And this has an impact of around 23 basis points in the capital ratios. And just to remind you, only our annual and semi-annual numbers are being reviewed, so that retained profit will be part of the capital, and you will see it back in those numbers. Secondly, the Dutch Central Bank has decided to apply a filter, effectively neutralizing the impact of the amended IAS 19 in Core Tier 1 capital. only under Basel II. And this correction of capital is booked under other regulatory adjustments. If you compare to year-end, both the Core Tier 1 capital and Tier 1 capital were stable. However, total capital decreased by around 500 million, mainly as a result of the call of some lower Tier 2 instruments. You may remember we announced back in February the intention to call a number of lower Tier 2 instruments that are amortizing under Basel II and will not be eligible capital under Basel III. Following the expiration of the call and coupon ban from the European Commission in March, around 800 million of instruments have been called, which are equal to around 400 million in capital value. All calls for the remaining of the instruments have been announced, and this will have an approximately 500 million impact on total capital in the next quarter. Our capital ratios were lower compared to year-end. This is actually fully driven by a 4.6 billion increase in risk-weighted assets. The increase has as reason and credit risk aspect. The increase is expected to be temporary and has a cause as a transfer of portfolios because we're finalizing the Basel II integration process of our credit models. On the slide, you can also see the Basel III impact. If we look to the fully loaded impact, then we will end up with a Core Equity Tier 1 ratio of 10.2%. As announced during our strategic update, we target a Core Equity Tier 1 ratio fully loaded of 11.5%-12.5% by 2070. So we are on track in that direction. If we look to the leverage ratio using the Basel III definition, but Basel II regulatory capital at the end of Q1, that was 3.1 compared to 3.2 at year-end. A couple of things about liquidity and funding, which is to be found on slide 8. A couple of positive developments. The loan-to-deposit ratio further improved to 123%, driven mainly by the increase in retail deposits and a marginal growth of the loan book. The liquidity buffer has decreased by 2.8 billion from the relative high levels at year-end. This decrease was due to a decline in the cash component of the liquidity buffer, offset by higher liquidity value of the retained RMBS and increased government bond positions. A total of 2.2 billion of long-term unsecured funding was raised during the first quarter, and 6.4 billion long-term funding matured. And in relation to our funding plan for this year, I can say that we aim to issue less than 10 billion this year. This amount includes some pre-funding for 2014. Depending on market appetite and pricing, we think unsecured funding will constitute the majority of funding to be raised this year. In order to continue the diversification of the funding profile and to support our business activities, focus will be put on investors in Asia, United States, and of course, still Europe. You may have noticed that we announced also this morning a cash tender offer for 2.5 billion government-guaranteed bonds that we had and were maturing 1 year from now. The rationale of the tender offer is to reduce the funding costs. Those bonds carry a fee payable to the Dutch state for the guarantee. A couple of things on slide 10, the asset quality of our credit portfolio. Well, as you are aware, of course, the economic environment in the Netherlands remained challenging, with unemployment and the number of bankruptcies rising. These economic conditions were reflected in higher impairments charges year-on-year, 39%, if we correct for the release on the Greek government corporate bonds. Looking specifically at the main risk parameters, at this slide, you see a slight deterioration in the past due and impaired ratios for mortgages and the impaired ratio for consumer loans. mainly driven by the deteriorated economic conditions in the Netherlands, as mentioned earlier. If we look to the commercial loan portfolio, you will see that both past due and also the impaired portfolio has decreased. The past due of commercial loans decreased because of stricter management of compliance with overdraft limits, and the impaired portfolio decreased mainly due to write-offs. And those write-offs are mainly visible in our commercial banking portfolio, related to clients in industrial transportation, in industrial engineering, building construction. Furthermore, we saw several write-offs in the retail sector. Particularly in commercial banking, measures have been taken to limit impairments by strengthening governance and procedures, for example, in relation to credit monitoring. This is ongoing already for more than 2 years. Tightening policies, underwriting policies, and training employees to increase the risk awareness across the entire organization. A couple of words on the real estate sector that remained under pressure, with impaired exposures for us amounting to 722 million as per end of Q1. This, however, is a relative small increase of 26 million if you compare this to year end. And the impairment charges were recorded mainly in the office segment of our portfolio. We see a stabilizing trend in the level of vacancy levels in the office sector. It's around the level of 14.5%. However, we see vacancy rates in the retail segment, they are rising. Couple of words on the mortgage portfolio, that's slide 11. The Dutch housing market continued to slow down in the first quarter, with further declines in house prices, 2.3% compared with year-end, and if we take year-on-year, it's 8.3%. Despite this decline, the average loan-to-market value of the mortgage portfolio and the size of the portfolio with loan-to-market values above 100% remained stable, which is important, at 82% and 21% respectively. And the stability of the average loan-to-market value can be explained by the impact of additional repayments by clients, which are, in fact, setting off the declines in house prices, which, of course, as you know, have an impact on the loss-given default in the portfolio. The past due and impaired exposures of the mortgage portfolio slightly increased by 151 and 95 million, respectively, in the first quarter compared to year-end. And this increase is particularly due to an increased number of clients facing unemployment. As a bank, we continue with our proactive approach to managing the mortgage portfolio in order to minimize past due inflows and impairments. As you have seen, also the mortgage loan portfolio slightly decreased, which actually, and you may remember that, is also our target, because in our strategic update last March, we said we aim to stabilize the mortgage portfolio instead of growing it. If you look to the portfolio product split, it is important to mention that, let's say, it remains somewhat stable compared to year-end, although we see a slight increase in annuity products as a result of the new tax deductibility rules applicable as of Jan 1st this year. Finally, I'd like to give you some background on the sale of part of the Greek government guaranteed exposures mentioned already by my colleague Jan. In April this year, we sold a tranche of these exposures with a notional amount of 580 million to a professional counterparty. And you may remember we conducted a similar transaction in October last year, which had an impairment release included in the Q3 2012 results. The rationale for both transactions was exactly the same, namely prudential risk management. And the sale of these Greek exposures led to a partial reversal of impairments previously taken, gross release of almost 300 and a net of tax release of 223 million. We still have a notional 410 million of Greek exposures remaining, or 205 million net of impairment charges. Well, to me, this concludes the overview from a risk management perspective, and I'll pass back to you, Jan.
Okay, Mr. Thank you. A few concluding remarks. Well, net profit 450 million, 125 million driven by large items. Excluding large items, net profit would have been 39% lower, mainly as a result of higher loan impairments and lower revenues in the markets and ALM environment. Well, looking ahead to the core tier one ratio still strong, excludes retained earnings, and if we would have included retained earnings, the core tier one ratio would have been 11.9. Now, looking ahead to the next quarters, we don't foresee economic conditions much improving in the Netherlands, and for this reason remain cautious for the remainder of the year, particularly in relation to the level of impairments. Okay, I think we find our story now and would like to hand over to the operator for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. As a reminder to all participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Again, it's star 1 to ask a question, and it's a hash key to cancel your request. The first question comes from the line of Cor Kluis. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon. Cor Kluis of Rabobank. I've got a few questions. First of all, concerning the risk-weighted assets, which rose by 3.3 billion by transfer of portfolios. And you mentioned that in the press release that this is temporarily. Can you explain what this exactly is and why is this temporarily? My second question is about the savings deposits, which are nicely growing. Can you give an idea how much money of savings deposits you have in Germany at Moneyou and how much you have in Belgium at Moneyou? And my third question is about, you mentioned in the press release there's a negative impact of the reassessment of the security financing activities abroad. Can you explain what this exactly is and what earnings impact that has, and the same with the equity derivative wind down? And the last question is about the Deutsche Bank clients. The door has been opened a little bit over there. Can you give some comments on the progress of client inflow from the old ABN AMRO clients, which were temporarily at Deutsche Bank? Those are my questions.
Okay, thank you. Wietse, I suggest you start with the first question.
Yeah, I will. Thanks for the question. Going back to that slide on slide 7, what is meant there to be temporarily is the increase in risk-weighted assets as a result of still migration of portfolios. Just as a background, we as a merged bank are still in the process of finalizing our Basel II integration path, which means that certain portfolios are brought to advanced, and that has certain technical effects in the model. What we expect for the, let's say, coming period is that other models will have as an impact a lower risk-weighted assets weight. So that's the reason why I said a temporary increase in risk-weighted assets. That would be my first answer. Jan, you can take the second question, I think.
Yeah, as to the saving deposits for Germany and Belgium, until now for Germany, we raised through Moneyou 6.6 billion, and in Belgium 1.3 billion.
Okay.
Yeah. Does it answer your question? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then the third question, the negative impact in the securities finance business. Well, we took a provision in the revenues based on the reassessment of the securities finance activities. There were long positions in securities, in Swift shares, based on decision of a federal court in Switzerland in the case of an other bank. It's not, which was based on a view of the court that if you have a long position which is hedged by a derivative, you are no longer entitled to the withholding dividend. Now, this is a different situation than our situation, but based on IFRS, we have said for reasons of prudence, we will take adjustment provision in the revenues. The amount is around 70 million.
70 or 17?
70 million.
Okay.
So we have taken a full impairment, as a matter of fact, for these revenues still to be received. But it's not sure where it's going to happen, and it will be for the Supreme Court later on. Again, this is not something for ABN AMRO specifically. It was for another bank, but for reasons of prudence, we've said under IFRS, we should take this impairment. Well, finally, we, as you mentioned, we stopped with our arbitrage activities in equity derivatives, which has some tenth of millions of revenues on an annual basis.
Okay.
And this is... the impact is still there, is already there in the revenues, but we haven't adjusted our cost base yet because of the decision taken only in December last year. Lisa, I suggest you take the fourth.
Yeah, what the question is to the clients from Deutsche Bank. To put in perspective, over the last couple of years, a lot of clients actually of Deutsche Bank, of let's say the old remedy which has been executed, has been returning to ABN AMRO. And my answer to your question, actually, whether we are open for new clients of Deutsche Bank returning to us, well, the answer, of course, is yes, as we are open to any client. But, of course, we also would like to look closely to the risk profile we're taking on board. But we will deal likewise with clients from Deutsche returning to us, as other clients who would like to bank with ABN AMRO.
And can you give an indication on the Deutsche Bank clients, which percentage of the clients have returned? Is it more than 10%?
That's difficult to say, but I can tell you that, let's say, from new clients we have taken on board over the last years, 50% was from Deutsche. And I can give you the number of thousands of clients who returned to us over the last couple of years.
Okay, okay. Wonderful. Very good, thanks.
Okay.
Okay.
The next question comes from the line of Benoit Petrarque. Please ask your question.
Yes, good morning all. Thanks for taking my questions. First question is on the commercial margins on mortgages and commercial loans. You have seen some nice improvement this quarter. So I was wondering what was your outlook for the rest of the year. Also, we've seen now interest rates on mortgages coming down. So I just wanted to discuss that with you, where you think it will go. Also on savings, we have seen savings rates coming down sharply. Do you think, is there any more repricing basically on savings? And then on the volume, you have seen some redemptions on the mortgages. What will be the kind of run rate of decrease going forward, you think? Third question is on the credit cost on the mortgages, 21 BIP this quarter. Could you give us a bit of guidance for the rest of the year? Do you think we have seen the worst in terms of NPL increase, or are you still expecting some negative there? The number four is again on MoneyU Germany and Belgium. In terms of, it's very clear on the liability side what you are doing there, but I just wanted to understand what you are doing on the asset side. We have seen the number of players growing very fast online, but with difficulties to grow on the asset side. So are you able to transfer Dutch assets there, or are you growing on local assets? And then finally, on the risk-weighted assets on Dutch mortgages, it's pretty low. It's around 10%. Average risk weight is around 10%. Do you think there's a risk that we will see a flaw on risk-weighted assets on mortgages? Thanks very much.
Okay, well, these are quite some questions. To start with the interest margins for mortgages and savings, to be very brief, interest margins have indeed increased compared to last year, but we expect them to be stable for the next quarters. So we don't expect them to go much down. Indeed, prices are coming down a little bit, but also funding has become a little bit cheaper. Now, the second question was about the volumes, I think.
Yeah, it was on the mortgage redemptions.
Yeah, also on savings margins. Yeah.
Perhaps I'll take the one on the couple of questions around the mortgages. We do think that, let's say, the impairment levels on the mortgage portfolio remains elevated, actually, at the levels we see at this moment, caused by still an increasing trend of unemployment, still a declining house prices. We expect, actually, this year around 8% decline of house prices. And as you know, that will be reflected in loss given default numbers in the portfolio. In terms of your question, the risk weight of mortgages in the Netherlands, which is at a current low level, whether that will change, we don't know. This is all in hands of the, central banks and even more European supervisory institutions. We don't know. We have to see. Your question as to the run rate on redemptions, that is difficult to say, but at least what we have seen over the, last certainly quarter-to-quarter development, where we have seen that the additional repayments of clients have taken place in such a way that actually they have offset the decline in house prices, and that also, clarifies the fact that, and you must have seen it in our figures, that our average the 82%, which we have here as the percentage of loan to market value, is still the same. So there actually, we expect that trend will go forward, as we expect still a lot of clients to repay more of their mortgage debt. That would be the answer on the mortgage.
Okay, then we have left the question about MoneyU.
Yeah.
Maybe Eric, you can have it. Or?
MoneyU, Germany and Belgium. And what you were asking is up to what extent we will also grow the asset base alongside the, liquidity we are shipping in. The liability side growing together with the asset side. Is that your question?
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
Our intention is clearly not to grow the asset base in line with, the liability side in Germany as well as Belgium, because our activities in those countries, are not to the extent that we can match those. So it has an economic side and a regulatory side. The regulator, as you all know, is not very much in favor of liquidity leaving the country. So therefore, we are trying in good coordination with the regulator and our respective business lines in those countries to match the liabilities by pledging assets from the Netherlands into either of those countries. Is that an answer to your question?
So you transfer Dutch ABS of Dutch mortgages you have originated, basically?
Or other assets.
To the local balance sheet.
We have sufficient collateral to match
all collateral.
The liquidity coming out of the countries.
Right.
And obviously RMBS could be one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Thank you. There is the next question.
The next question comes from the line of Muriel Perrin. Please ask your question.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for this call. Muriel Perrin from Morgan Stanley. I'd have three quick questions, if I may. The first one is on non-interest income. I think you already answered part of the question here. I was just wondering whether it's fair to assume now that you have reached a bottom in that segment with these large items that you had this quarter. The second question would be a quick follow-up on the risk-weighted assets increase that you had. You said it's temporary, but I didn't get when you were expecting this to be released. And the last one would be on NPLs in general, not just in the mortgage market. What are your forward-looking indicators telling you? When would you expect them to peak if you already have an ID? And you said that loan loss provisions would remain elevated. Do you see scope for them being worse than they are now, or should they just be stable at these levels? Thank you.
Shall I take the last two ones,
okay,
and then Jan, you can take the first
okay.
one?
No.
To start with your second question about that temporary effect, again, what we do expect in the course of the coming quarters is that we will see some benefit from other models which we have, integrated. So I'm talking about the course of the coming quarters, so I'm talking this year. And again, exactly the amount of risk-weighted assets cannot be put to one number, but it will be at least in a bandwidth between, 4 to 7 billion. That is my answer to your second question. The third question I thought it was, could you give some forward-looking statement on the other loan portfolio? I thought that was the question. If we look to the commercial loans, which is mainly our SME segment, but also our corporate clients segment, there it has to be said that SMEs are still suffering a lot from the economic downturn in the Netherlands, especially the companies who are not export-oriented. And we think that the current levels of impairment will remain elevated in the remaining part of the year.
Elevated, but at the current level, it's not worse than that.
That's what I said, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, about non-interest income. Well, your question was where we're at the bottom, excluding large items.
Correct.
Yeah, large items normally have an incidental one-off character, but excluding these, as I mentioned, securities volumes were quite low, also because of some uncertainty around Basel III. And volumes are picking up again. At the same time, at market results have been gradually declining quarter on quarter. Also, become spreads have considerably come down over the last few years. So these will probably remain less.
Sorry, I think the line just cut at the end. You said you would expect them to remain currently at these levels? The line cut, I'm sorry.
No, I was about securities finance. Securities finance volumes were much lower the fourth quarter and have increased in the first quarter again, also because of uncertainty about the Basel III impact. Furthermore, the margins on securities finance were also lower than the year before and are expected to be on the same level.
Thank you.
Okay.
The next question comes from James Hyde. Please ask your question.
Hello. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you on the much improved disclosure that's been improving almost every quarter. Very much welcome it. I had a question about this sort of inflow of NPLs. Now, it's difficult to determine what is the pace of deterioration because you've got some charge-offs, you've used provisions, and the stock of provisions has fallen much faster than the NPL. So could you talk about whether, you know, for the various business lines, new NPLs are basically coming in at a faster pace than recent quarters? That's my first question. Second question, and final, is any update on LCR or NSFR?
Right. Jan, let me start with that first question. Then probably
The second can be very brief. Because
please.
In the trade update, we haven't published figures about LCR and NSFR. There will be in our six-month figures. As to the LCR, there was a slight decrease also because of the liquidity buffer was down a couple of billion. But there will be detailed figures in the six-month presentation.
Okay, thanks.
Your first question, thank you for the improved disclosures. Still, of course, it brings questions about. We do understand that. Trying to nail down that question of you to one answer, actually, because if I understand the question quite well, do we see an increased inflow of new NPLs in the bank in our, let's say, financial restructuring recovery department? The answer has to be there that in terms of volume, we see Q-on-Q the same inflow. What we, however, do see that the number of clients from the SME part has somewhat increased in terms of inflow. But again, in terms of the volume, the impact is more or less the same.
So
does that answer your question?
Yeah, so a bit more on SMEs and a bit less on mortgages. Would that be fair?
That's not what I said, because I was talking about the commercial portfolio.
Oh, sorry. Sure.
And if I talk about the impairment side of the mortgage portfolio, that is probably then your other question, there we do see that also in terms of a number of clients, we see an increase in terms of impaired mortgage portfolio.
Okay, numbers up, volumes not so much. Okay, I understand. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder to all participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. To cancel your request, please press the hash key. The next question comes from the line of Albert Plug. Please ask your question.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon, gentlemen. A few questions from my side. Apologies if you have to repeat yourself, as I had some technical issues. It is mainly related on the mortgage book. On the LTV, which has been stable at 82%, you basically cite two reasons, reason is the prepayments. What is the trend so far this year? Because it was quite in fashion the last half of last year to start prepaying your mortgages. Is this continuing? And also on the calculation, you mentioned that you deduct basically the capital put aside by customers to repay the loans. If you would not do that, what is then the LTV to also have some comparison with peers? And another question I had was on the consumer loans portfolio, where the impaired ratio went up from, I think, 4.1% to 4.6%. Can you describe a bit what is going on in that that loan book? And my final question is more real estate finance related. The impairments were pretty low at 21 million this quarter. One of the reasons, as you already flagged, were offices, but also some impairments on the unsecured land bank was mentioned. Can you give a bit more color on the size of that that book? Thank you.
Let me start with the mortgage book. The mortgage redemptions were around, this is redemptions in terms of, let's say, repayments voluntarily made, actually, we're talking about, was about 650 million. Actually, what we do see is an increased trend of clients who are voluntarily repaying their mortgage. We think that trend will continue. What I also explained, actually, is that this trend, actually, is compensating the other impact which you normally have in those economic situations in your mortgage portfolio, that as a result of declining house prices, you would also have to increase your impairments, actually. So what we see here is an 82% loan-to-market value remaining at that level. I thought your other question was as to the consumer portfolio. There clearly what is an reason for an increased impairment level there is that as a result of, for example, the unemployment rise in the Netherlands, we simply do see clients having more issues to repay their consumer loans. Now, actually, I lost your question on the real estate.
It was mentioned on the unsecured land bank as part of the where the provisions were taken in the first quarter, and what the size of that that book is.
We don't disclose the size of that book. I can tell you that it is a very limited bucket of our real estate portfolio. Actually, at year-end, but probably also at semi-annual numbers, we will give some more disclosure there. But I think it's important to bear in mind that last year, and especially also in Q4, we had to take a lot of impairments related to real estate. Mm-hmm. And compared with those amounts, the total impairments which we took in Q1 are very relatively small. Actually, the amount was 21 million in and over the last quarter. It's also important to understand that the portfolio relatively is underweighted as to offices and certainly to land exposure. We don't have a lot on that, actually, and we're more into either the financing of real estate listed companies, or we are into the financing of pre-let real estate projects, etc. And it's, I think, difficult to give a forward-looking vision here, but I think it's fair to say that a large amount of the real estate issues in the book has been taken already last year.
And maybe one more general question on the, let's say, the loan impairment outlook. You mentioned your outlook to remain cautious. How should I read that statement? Do you expect on a group basis, therefore, the absolute level of impairment charges in this quarter to go up still? Or is it more that you want to say it will probably remain at this elevated level?
No, I would like to say it as follows, that compared to the impairment level last year, if you would exclude the impact of Greece last year, then the level of last year for the group as a whole will probably the level which we will see this year, albeit that, of course, we are not sure about it exactly, as still the economic situation is quite quite unclear. Okay. But that is actually the comparison we would like to make. But on the group level, and we're not talking specifically on the specific portfolios.
And excluding Greece, last year was 1.3 billion.
That's correct.
And one final quick question, promise the last one, is on the pension cost. That of course, is one of the reasons of the cost inflation this quarter as well. Can you give maybe some sensitivity around the impact of the discount rate, which is a very big factor here? I think it would also be helpful to see, let's say, if rates do rise, how that might impact the pension costs going forward.
Well, the sensitivity. Well, if I take to 2012, then. Because we took the discount rate, the difference was about, on the annual basis, 300 million. So, and that was for 2% difference between discount rate and expected return on assets, which was used before.
Yep.
So based on 15 billion of a pension fund, 1% is around 150 million.
Okay.
Albert, there is some information in the annual report of last year on page 302, where there is some sensitivity analysis.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Again, to all participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. To cancel your request, please press the hash key. The next question comes from Georgina Aston. Please ask your question.
Hello there. I was wondering if you give me more disclosure on the asset quality of the book, in particular on your non-performing loans. What was the value of the total write-downs that you took in Q1, and how does that compare to the value of the NPL inflows that you saw in Q1? Because I'm trying to better understand why the coverage of your non-performing loans fell quarter on quarter. And secondly, also on your commercial real estate portfolio, I know you mentioned you have only a small proportion in land, but could you provide some more disclosure on the type of commercial real estate you have exposure to? So, for example, what proportion is in offices, and also how that has actually been performing? What sort of non-performing ratio is that, and what is the LTV of that type of exposure? I realize you haven't provided that disclosure to date, but it's something which your peers do, so I would find it very helpful. Thank you.
No, and exactly, I mean, the reason why we have not provided that is because we will do that again semi-annual. But let me try to give you some guidance here, but because I think that is important. First, to start, your point about understanding, if I understand you quite well, actually, what exactly happened in terms of the NPL write-offs and the impairments. The whole Greece impairment has been taken out of that bucket. So, I mean, we should extract from that. And if we talk, for example, which is on the slide, and I take it here with me, the slides on commercial loans, which is on slide 10, where you see the impaired ratio actually going down, and you may have expected that it would go up. The only reason for that is that we have taken a sizable amount of write-offs, actually, which, of course, is then reflected in a lower impaired ratio. As a trend for the whole bank, what we do see, however, is Q on Q, when we take the year-end impaired ratio of the bank, which was 2.6%, in Q1, on balance sheet, actually, we are on 2.3%. So that, I think, gives you a certain direction. As to the real estate, I would like to remain there with the answer I think I gave to the previous question, that what we do have here, and I can add some guidance here because we have published that also last year, we have a total exposure at default in our real estate portfolio of around 12 billion. That gives you, I think, the relative size of this portfolio to our total loan book. Mainly that is geared to Dutch real estate. I think that's important. Very less land positions, to hardly nothing. Mainly geared to exposures to listed real estate companies. We have pre-let financing structures to real estate financing projects. Large part also is dealing with private banking relations who have in their asset class real estate. Another part is also financing of building societies in the Netherlands, and those loans are all guaranteed by the state. That is actually what I would like to give as a guidance, and I think we will be in the semi-annual numbers with more disclosures around this topic, because I do understand that that helps also in your analysis of the bank, but we are gradually improving there in terms of our external disclosures.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, I suggest there's time for one last question. So is there another question?
There are no further questions at this time, sir. Please continue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, first of all, thank you all for your attention. If there are more questions, of course, you can contact our investor relations department, and I think that the full investor presentation is available or will be available shortly after this call today. I would like to mention as well that this has been my last call as CFO of ABN AMRO, given that I will be retiring in the next month. And Kees van Dijkhuizen, the former CFO of NIBC, who is already in-house, he will succeed me as a new CFO as of the 1st of June. And, well, I have all the confidence that Kees will take over these activities and the way I know him already. So I'm fully confident that about filling in this role by Kees van Dijkhuizen. But at the same time, I would like to mention that I've very much enjoyed these calls and the meetings with many of you of the last 3-4 years. And, well, hopefully we provided you with a better insight in the performance of the bank and improved the disclosures simply in line with our commitment to transparency. So I would like to thank you all for actively following ABN AMRO, and of course I hope you will keep on doing so, but I'm sure you will keep on doing so. And thank you again for your participation in this call. Thank you very much, and I and we wish you all a good weekend. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.